A report which suggested an annual bill of €20 billion for 20 years to fund a united Ireland has been described as a worst case scenario by a Sinn Féin TD. The report by the Institute of International and European Affairs said the significant expense would require an increase in taxation of around 25% and or a significant reduction in expenditure. Professor Seamus McGuinness, Research Area Coordinator for Labour Market Research at the ESRI, is with us to give us his reaction to this. Professor, good morning and thanks for taking our call.
Good morning, Owen. You're welcome.
When you read this report and read the headlines yesterday that it would cost €20 billion a year for 20 years for a united Ireland, what was your reaction to it? Too much or not enough?
Well, just to put it in context, Owen, myself and my colleague, Dr. Adele Bergen at the ESRI, have been doing quite a bit of work on the issues of constitutional change and North-South differences in living standards, productivity. We've published these in peer-reviewed journals, including the Cambridge Journal of Economics and several reports. So we have quite a bit of experience in this area. So when you're talking about calculating the cost of reunification, people usually talk about the subvention figure, which is the cost of running Northern Ireland over and above the tax receipts that are taken in with subtractions. There's a couple of problems with that analysis. Firstly, it's a static analysis. So it assumes basically that there will be a border poll on a Friday and reunification on a Monday, that there will be no prior planning, that there will be no transition period, which is a really a problematic assumption because we know with all constitutional referendums there will be transition periods. There was one with Brexit. There was one planned for Scottish independence. If you look at the handover of Hong Kong, it took 13 years. So that's a big problem. Secondly, this type of analysis, depending on the assumptions that you make, you can come up with lots of different estimates. For example, Professor John Doyle, who is also a well-respected academic, wrote a paper and based on his assumptions, subvention was at $3 billion per year. Here we have another set of assumptions that's putting it at $20 billion a year. There's also the problem that this type of analysis ignores the actual underlying drivers of a subvention requirement, and that is Northern Ireland's low productivity. We've researched that. We've modelled that. We know what the determinants of low productivity are. We know that that low productivity can be changed over time given the right investments and the right policy framework. So this type of analysis also assumes that there would be no improvements in Northern Ireland's economic outcomes following any change to reunification, that would remain low productivity over a period of 20 years. So if we take the $20 billion estimate, the key assumptions that underline that are that, and unfortunately that's the number that's in people's heads. You've just cited it back to me this morning. That $20 billion assumes that there will be a border poll on a Monday, reunification takes place on a Friday, there is no transition period, the Irish government immediately says, we will agree to continue to pay Northern Ireland's share of UK debt. We will immediately concede to pay the pension bills of Northern Ireland pensioners going forward. We will immediately adjust public sector pay and welfare rates in Northern Ireland to upscale to the Republic of Ireland. And then we will create a policy environment in which the Northern Ireland economy will not improve for a 20-year period. There will be no transition period. There will be no investments or inputs from external actors such as the EU, the US, the UK. So I suppose we'll put it back to you, Owen. Do you think that's a reasonable scenario that's likely to play out?
Well, I'm going to...
And that any Irish government would allow that to happen.
Yeah, I'm going to read you a quote from Professor John Fitzgerald, who's the co-author and co-chair of the Institute of International and European Affairs Economics Group. He says, even though Ireland has a much higher national income, funding the needs of the people of Northern Ireland in a united Ireland would put huge financial pressure on the people of Ireland, resulting in an immediate major reduction in their living standards. He compared the sum of €20 billion to a third of a bank bailout every year. The solution is, he says, if Northern Ireland dramatically changes how they run their economy, in particular in the educational sphere, this would mean that the gap between the North and South would narrow and also that their revenue would rise substantially more. What do you have to say to that?
But I've just explained to you why that wouldn't be the case. Number one, prior to any border poll happening, there would have to be substantial planning undertaken by the Irish government that would that would seek to minimise the costs and maximise the benefits of reunification, and that would have a, that plan would ideally look at the assumptions that the potential things that could happen post-border poll, but it would focus on recognising that there would be a transition period and looking at the policy frameworks where you could improve Northern Ireland productivity over a transition period, therefore reduce the subvention costs and therefore maximise the benefits and minimise the costs of reunification at the point of a handover. Mm. As I said, Professor Fitzgerald's assumptions are that there would be no transition period, that there would be no planning for reunification, and that reunification would result in no improvements in Northern Ireland's economy. We have researched low productivity in Northern Ireland. We have a report on it. We've modelled it. We understand that low productivity is really a driver of a number of things, not just educational underinvestment, as Professor Fitzgerald said, but also things like lack of infrastructural spending and lack and a poor industrial policy. Mm. All of these key levers are subject to policy and structural change.
What about,
so there's no reason to...
Yeah, what about what it would mean for, you know, John or Mary down the road and their taxation? Because that's what a lot of people are going to be looking at here. In order to fund a United Ireland, will we have to pay more tax? And are people going to be in favour or okay with that for their taxes to go up in order to fund a United Ireland? What would you say to those people?
Well, listen, there's no one's arguing that there isn't a subvention issue at the moment. The issue is that there is no proper planning being undertaken by the Irish government, so people don't know the answers to those questions. I can't give you the answers to those questions. The only way you can get an answer to those questions is if the Irish government gets involved in a proper planning. We know that there's a border poll coming down the line at some stage. That is a major factor that we need to take account of for the Irish economy, both north and south. So you need to plan for that inevitability. In the same way that analysis was done in the run-up to the Brexit referendum to look at the economic impacts of that, we also undertook analysis to look at the economic impacts of the war in Ukraine. Mm. So there is a responsibility on the Irish government to say to people, in the event of a border poll that ratifies unity, this is what we expect to happen in terms of what a transition period would look like, what types of policy frameworks we would undertake, how we would negotiate with the British government in terms of things that we can't predict now, in terms of the debt situation and the pensions liabilities. Mm. And ultimately, we would expect at the end of that period, these would be the scenarios in terms of growth, and these are the demographics that would hold at that period. And this is the likely cost or benefit of Irish unity.
I was watching the Tonight Show last night on Virgin Media, and I'm sure you've probably seen it as well, and Professor John Fitzgerald was on that programme, as was Padraig McLaughlin of Sinn Féin and Lisa Chambers of Fianna Fáil. And apart from the Shared Island initiative, which Lisa Chambers was talking about, there didn't appear to be planning, as you said, from the government, but similarly from the opposition, Sinn Féin, who have come out and, you know, they're founded essentially on wanted to become, Ireland to become a united nation. There's no planning at all across the political spectrum, it would appear.
Well, it's only the people that are in government that can initiate planning, because planning would involve a very serious set of investments. So you would have to incorporate macroeconomic models of the north and the southern economy to model out the financial scenarios that would take place post reunification under different setups and under different transition periods. You would have to use micro simulation models to figure out what the different implications of different tax and welfare adjustments would be. So this is not something, and unfortunately, you know, these back of the envelope projections that don't take account of the reality of what a transition period and what the reunification and planning process would look like aren't that helpful, in my view. This proper planning takes massive investments, massive planning. The Scottish Government had a document prior to the referendum in 2014 that lay out some of these implications for Scottish independence, for example. I think the situation here is much more complicated because you're merging two economies and two systems, and the planning requirements are much more extreme. That can only be commissioned by government. Professor Brendan O'Leary has argued there needs to be given the risks here and the inevitability of a border poll, the need for planning is such that there should perhaps be a department, a specified government department allocated to this task. So it's not something that people can do ad hocly. It's not something that individual political parties can do. It's something that needs to be done by government in a verifiable way that's trustworthy, so that when people go to the polls, they have a good idea. You cannot be certain exactly what's going to happen, but you have a good idea that the situation will be managed and what the likely costs and benefits of that are.
Professor Seamus McGuinness, Research Area Coordinator for Labour Market Research at the ESRI. Thanks for joining us. I'm sure it's something and a debate that will go on for a long, long time. But as Professor McGuinness has said, and a lot of other commentators have said here, planning is needed, a conversation is needed around a united Ireland and, you know, the benefits and the negatives of it, but also from an economic point of view as well. Thanks for joining us, Professor McGuinness. Coming up after the break, we'll be telling you about a house building firm involved in two estates, one in Allen and one in Derrinturn, that has gone bust and says the planning system is broken.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
We covered this in our news yesterday, and indeed it was covered in the Irish Independent. A director of a house building company which has gone into receivership has said he no longer plans to develop new homes as the system has, in quotes, become too tied up in bureaucracy. Eugene Finn, managing director of Landport Estates Limited, trading as Alder Homes, warned the housing crisis will worsen as, in quotes again, there are too many issues bubbling under the surface in the construction sector. Alder Homes was involved in building two estates here in Kildare, Clundara in Derrinturn and Ballantyne Park in Allen. The latter is nearly completed. However, dozens of houses were built in Clundara. 15 properties are unfinished and buyers are now left in limbo about whether they will get to move into their new homes. Some paid deposits for their houses nearly 2 years ago. Well, yesterday, Martin Osborne of KFM News spoke to Eugene Finn, Managing Director of Landport Estates Limited, trading as Alder Homes.
I wouldn't say it's just restricted to Kildare, to be honest with you. I would say it's more of a nationwide issue. Everything, for me, the system is broken. Planning is broken. Zoning is broken. There's a lack of infrastructure. And I think there's, you know, a realisation, or lack of a realisation that of the enormity of the problem, to be honest. I think it's widely accepted now that the demographic assumptions that were made underpinning the planning frameworks were underestimated. And if we start from the wrong place, we haven't got a hope. Our population is exploding. We have obvious shortages of houses. I think from a political perspective, you know, political terms are 5 years. There isn't the time in 5 years to fix this problem. It's a long-term issue. Infrastructure isn't there to support the level of housing that's required. And individuals or individual authorities or anything like that, their hands are tied, as far as I'm concerned. This is a wider issue that's going to take a long time to sort out.
It was cited in an article that construction costs contributed to the financial situation leading to receivership. Could you explain what happened there and whether or not you did expect those costs?
Yeah, so costs spiralled and you know, thankfully have kind of largely slowed down in that respect. But house building is funny, as in you contract sales and then the costs go up. You kind of get caught between a rock and a hard place. Mm. And that certainly did happen to us over previous phases. You think you're doing the right thing, releasing houses to the market, getting people signed up and contracted so you have security in your own business model. And then completely uncontrollably, the costs go up, but you're locked into contracts, be that for private buyers or social housing.
And look, I suppose you were quoted in the article as saying, we understand that many people are anxious for a comprehensive update. As soon as we have finalised our assessment, we will communicate with all involved. I know how much rent they've paid, I know how much pressure they are under from their landlords. Some of the properties were to be used for social housing, others have yet to be sold. We can't forget that there are people, prospective home buyers, on the receiving end of this. Where does that leave them? I know a lot of them now will be scratching their heads and kind of worried now about whether or not they will actually have a home.
Yeah, so true. Like I say, for me, they're the ones largest impacted here. You know, this buying a house for anyone is a life-changing event. It's stressful enough without there being unwarranted delays. And when it's, you know, things that can be avoided, we call it, you know, getting in the way of them getting their hands on their home. It's a very sad situation, to be honest. It's extremely stressful for them. And like I say, I've spoken to all of our buyers over the last recently, obviously, but for the last year and a half, while we've been delayed, I've been trying to keep in touch with them and keep them posted on events. But it's one of those things that's just completely out of our control.
And look, I know Cormac O'Connor of KPMG is handling the receivership. He said he intends to complete the remaining units subject to an ongoing assessment of the current situation and engagement with a number of stakeholders. Do you have any ongoing involvement there?
No. To be honest, we're out of that loop. We've obviously said that we're available to help in any way, shape or form, you know, that we can. I understand there's discussions going on with the council, and there's plans being drafted to reinstate planning permissions and things like that, but it'd be all kind of arm's length from me, to be honest.
And look, what was the relationship then with Kildare County Council? Did you come up against many brick walls with them?
Yeah, look, it's one of those tricky situations where it's an older planning permission that's been extended numerous times. Legislation has changed, planning laws have changed, time has passed, Irish Water was established since the planning was granted. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, an individual authority, it's a tricky one to navigate. I wouldn't say it's anyone's fault or anyone's, there's no kind of intent there. But it certainly hasn't been easy.
And I know, look, you did say you've withdrawn from house building, that you don't think you'll be going back anytime soon. Did you mean that?
I did. For me, a business that I've been involved in for more than 25 years, I've seen both sides of it. I've seen pre-crash, I've seen post-crash. Again, this is my own opinion, is that, you know, it's a business where the one with the investment, the one whose neck is on the line, if you're not in full control of the outcome of the project, well, then there's something seriously wrong. There's a lot of people have control over the project and influence on the project, be it planning, zoning, funding, actual construction, certification, all of those things. There's only one person paying the bill, and for me, it just got very, very much out of control.
Going back to the 15 unfinished houses in Clondara, did you try everything in your power to get those buildings finished?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. We just weren't permitted to continue. There's no question about that. If it was dead, those people would be in their homes now if it was left up to me.
And look, I know you are a director of another company which applied for planning permission for 17 residential units and 18 car park spaces in Kilcock. I know that company is unaffected by the receivership, but the council has refused the application. Do you plan on resubmitting, or...?
I don't. That was a difficult one as well. As far as we were concerned, we'd done a fine planning application and we'd used the best design team that we could, and we followed, we had a previous refusal on the file, we addressed all the issues on the refusal, and we're still received another refusal, so very frustrating situation there, and again, it's more, for me, the system is broken, and this is going to trundle on for a long time to come yet.
Well, look, it's quite alarming that you, as a developer, are saying the system is broken. We are in the middle of a housing crisis, and you believe it isn't going to be solved anytime soon?
God, no. I don't think so, no. Definitely not. I think, to be fair, in order to solve a problem, you have to establish exactly what the problem is, and I don't think we're there yet. I don't think the enormity of the issue has been unearthed. You know, when we know we're starting from the wrong face, when we know the measures that are being taken only affect demand side, when supply side is the problem, we're looking at it upside down, to be honest. All government interventions are more to do with incentivising buyers, assisting buyers, which is all very well in a market that's operating property. But unless there's a stimulation on the demand side, unless there's more land zoned, unless there's planning being granted, unless there's something being done about objections, NIMBYism, unless there's something being done about, you know, a longer-term plan for the provision of infrastructure, we're all doing is putting a sticky plaster over, to be honest.
Eugene Finn, Managing Director of Landport Estates Limited, trading as Alder Homes, which has gone into receivership, saying he no longer plans to develop new homes as the system has, in quotes, become too tied up in bureaucracy. And a reminder, Alder Homes was involved in building two estates, Clundara in Derren Tern and Ballantyne Park in Allen. The latter is nearly completed, but in Clundara, 15 properties remain unfinished, with buyers left in limbo about whether or not they'll get to move in to their new homes. We did contact Kildare County Council for a statement and a comment on that in relation to why they didn't extend the planning permission for Alder Homes to continue working on Derren Tern. I know they had extended it a couple of times before, they just didn't continue extending it, and we just wanted to find out what the reasons were. We didn't get a response as of yet, but if we do, we'll bring it to you. Going back to some of the messages that have come in, one listener says, I'm tired of listening to Sinn Féin. They moan about everything and do absolutely nothing. They promise everything but never say where they're going to get their funds from. In relation to Cathal Berry sitting on the fence, maybe he's considering his stance in order to make an informed decision. That's one way of looking at it. The other way is people saying that he needs to get off the fence and make up his mind as soon as possible so that the constituency knows and the people of Kildare know whether or not he's going to be supporting Simon Harris as Taoiseach. But he did tell us that we would know before the vote in the Dáil next Tuesday. Another message says, could you please find out if the Carlow Road in Athy is closed on Sunday for Run Athy? And we, as a resident of the Coneyborough estate, have had no notifications. And that comes in from a listener. I understand Kildare County Council have gotten back to us on that interview, Hannah. You might just print it off for me and bring it in, and then we can read it out. But in relation to those roads that have or will be closed in Athy for the Run Athy, is the Carlow Road at 9:45 on Sunday morning from 12:30 from Emily Square out to the Three Counties. Diversions will be in place to the R418 into Athy. The new distributor road will also be closed from 9:45 until 12:30. This is on Sunday, by the way. Just remember that, and it will be closed for about 2.5 hours, these roads. Emily Square is also closed to traffic from 8 o'clock until 1 p.m. on Sunday. The main road in and out of Athy, that's the N78, is not affected and will be open at all times. Access in and out of Dunbrin will be available at all times via the Fort Barrington Road. Access from Coneyborough, Kingsgrove and Oaklawn will be maintained with a left turn only to Ardree Road, but there could be some delays between 10:15 and 10:45. So that's the latest that we have on that.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, the response from Kildare County Council in relation to those housing estates in Allen and Derren Tern that we were talking about, Ballantyne Park and Clundara. It says, thank you for your query. This development was originally granted permission in 2006 and was extended in 2011 and again in 2017 and then further extended in 2021. It says Kildare County Council are precluded from granting any further extensions to this permission under Section 42 of the Planning and Development Act 2000 as amended, and all details in relation to that decision are available on the Kildare County Council website if you go to the planning section of it. So thanks to Kildare County Council for getting back to us on that. It's in relation to the interview we did with Eugene Finn a little bit earlier on. Now, Storm Kathleen is to make landfall this weekend. It's named after Newbridge scientist Kathleen Lonsdale. We'll be talking to Met Aaron in just a moment. But first of all, who was Kathleen Lonsdale?
Famous Kildare people on KFM.
Kathleen Lonsdale, scientist. Born Kathleen Yardley in Newbridge in 1908, her family moved to England where she attended the girls' high school at Ilford and studied mathematics at the Bedford College for Women in London. Offered a research position at University College London by the eminent crystallographer W.H. Bragg, Lonsdale's most important scientific contribution was the study of hexamethyl benzene crystals. In her studies, she showed that the benzene ring, a most important compound in organic chemistry, is flat. In 1945, she was granted a fellowship of the Royal Society in London, becoming one of the first females to ever receive this distinctive scientific honour. And in 1949, Kathleen Lonsdale was appointed head of the crystallography department at University College London. She was created a Dame Commander of the Order of the British Empire in 1965 and died in London on April 1st, 1971. In her memory, the Lonsdale Prize for Chemistry is awarded annually at NUI Maynooth.
KFM supporting Kildare's wealth of local history and heritage.
So that's a little bit about Kathleen Lonsdale. When you hear Storm Kathleen in the news over the weekend, you'll know exactly what we're talking about. And media duty forecaster with Met Éireann, Liz Walsh, is with me now to discuss what we're likely to see over the weekend. And Liz, would I be right in saying that it's really the western counties that are going to see the worst of this weather?
Hi, Owen. Yes, it is. So basically, yeah, we're looking, the orange level winds are out to the west. They're kind of in the counties that are highlighted. So Cork, Kerry, Waterford, Mayo and Galway. So we're looking at orange level winds for those counties starting early on in the morning, like from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. for the southern counties of Cork, Kerry and Waterford, and 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. for Galway and Mayo. But there is a yellow level wind warning nationwide from 4 a.m. So that's for Storm Kathleen. And what for Kildare listeners, it's probably that you'll notice that the winds will be kind of peaking sometime between 10 a.m. and about maybe lunchtime, you know, 2 p.m. or so. So what's unusual about this particular storm is that usually, you know, we have the wind field it's really strongest in the west. What we don't usually see is that we're having yellow level wind warnings like nationwide. The modelling that we're looking at, it's showing winds, you know, above 90 kilometres per hour across much of the country. Now, a lot of the time, like, you know, we'll put, you know, a kind of a buffer zone around and below, and you know, we'll have, like, you know, and sometimes, you know, some counties won't see above 70 kilometres per hour, but there's fairly high certainty that across the country tomorrow, every county will see 90 kilometres per hour or more for a time as Storm Kathleen passes up to the west of Ireland.
Obviously, the knock-on effect of strong winds, then people will need to be mindful of fallen trees, flying debris around the place, you know, power outages, possibly fallen wires, coastal flooding along coastal areas.
Absolutely, yeah. So, definitely, there's definitely a scope for coastal inundation and wave overtopping along the west coast, with the kind of the surge and the high tides. You know, from the high tide is around 3 to 4 a.m. On the west coast, and then 3 to 4 in the afternoon again. And so the winds will still be, you know, very high at that stage. And it's kind of a prolonged period of strong winds for Western counties. So definitely, you know, we will see that probably coming up in the news cycle high waves along the west coast for sure. The thing about the yellow wind warning as well is that, you know, whether it does not pose a threat to the general population, but is potentially dangerous on a localized scale. So that's important to note. So just to be aware that if you are exposed to danger by nature of your activity or your specific location, don't take avoidable risks. So that's what we mean for a yellow warning. Orange is a bit more serious, is prepare yourself in an appropriate way depending on your location and activity. So, you know, because of the potential to be significantly impacted. But certainly, yeah, that, you know, possibilities of things that could happen are like power outages, trees down, branches, and dangerous or difficult travelling conditions.
Finally then, Liz, it's been a wet, I suppose, start to 2024, and I was struck by a comment that a local footballer manager made the other day when he was interviewed after a match. He said, it feels like it's never going to stop raining. We've had quite a wet start, as I say.
Yeah, we certainly have. I mean, I feel like, you know, we've been forecasting since last summer, really. Like, we never really got a breakthrough last summer. You know, it wasn't a particularly great one. And so there was a lot of rain and, you know, showers and things going through then. And I just think it has really been nonstop. And I think that's quite, you know, evident in the climate, you know, the climate statements that we've had over the last while. You know, that the ground is saturated and it hasn't had really a chance to dry out. And unfortunately, we can't see anything changing in the near future for anyway, because there's more, it's kind of scattered blustery showers on Sunday, and then again another spell of rain moving up from the south on Monday. And so the cumulative effect of all this rain is saturated soils and, you know, poor trafficability for farmers and things like that, and obviously not great for people out playing football in the fields.
Liz Walsh, Media Duty forecaster with Met Éireann. Thanks for that forecast for the weekend, Liz. Storm Kathleen making landfall in the early hours of tomorrow morning. And a reminder that here in Kildare, there will be a wind warning from around about 7 o'clock in the morning up until lunchtime, with those winds expected to be worst between 10 o'clock in the morning and 1 p.m. or thereabouts tomorrow afternoon. Thanks to Liz. Let's go to the sporting action with Leinster Leader sports editor Tommy Callaghan. Good morning, Tommy, and all eyes on the women again this weekend. They're in the Division 2 final against Tyrone, and we could probably just play the same interview, Tommy, that we've said for the last number of months, and there's nothing that hasn't been said about this incredible group of women who have just achieved so much in the last year and a half.
Absolutely, Owen. Good morning. Yeah, we could just repeat what we've been saying for a good few weeks and probably months at this stage now. Sunday, a huge day back in Croke Park for the ladies, taking on Tyrone. Looking for win number 22 on the trot. We're at least undefeated. There's one drawing in there amongst that, which ironically was against Tyrone, but it'll be they're under 21 games undefeated. And which is an incredible achievement going back all the way to the start of last season, as won everything that they could win last year, and have continued that incredible form into Division 2, have already been promoted into Division 1, did so with two games in hand after wins over Monaghan, Donegal, Cavan, Tipperary and Laois, two games to spare, then drew with Tyrone in that league match that probably you could dismiss because both were probably short, held back a few players, and their final league game then was a comfortable win against Westmead. So all set for what should be an incredible game on Sunday, Croke Park, throwing, I think, 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock, and full commentary on KFM in association with Dowling's Bar in Ballyshannon. The hard work from the women is kind of done, Tommy. As you say, both Tyrone and Kildare are promoted up to Division 1, and what an achievement that is. But I don't think Diana Hora or any of the players will be going in with that mentality on Sunday afternoon. They'll be wanting to get some silverware at the end of the campaign.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you see, you mustn't forget, Owen, that probably at the start of this campaign, the idea, the whole, I'd say the number one priority was for Kildare was to cement their place in Division 2.
Yeah.
Coming up from Division 3, so definitely a tough assignment coming up from 3 to 2. But then, I suppose, their probably big match was their second game against Donegal, away to Donegal, who had been relegated from Division 1. Now, Kildare, that was an incredible performance. That was there, Roisin Byrne, he scored 1-5. And that was probably when the alarm bells start to ring amongst their competitors. And they said, this Kildare team can't be too bad. And it's just, look, we've mentioned it, we've talked about the different individual players. And, I mean, remember, there's a fair few changes on this squad now, even from last year. So it's really, Diana Hora certainly has done miracles. Not miracles, but she has certainly honed them, and they seem to be getting better. Their defence is top class. They have some very, very exciting scorers. They're coming up against a team on Sunday who probably their big asset is their forward division. They have scored more over the league than Kildare have. I think they've scored something like 107 points, 8 or 9 points more than what Kildare have scored. Now, their stats, they're not necessarily point and everything, but I mean, you have to remember that their biggest asset is their forward play, is Tyrone's. And while Kildare have a very, very good defensive record, that has to be cemented again now next Sunday to get over the line.
The excitement within the county can't be understated as well, already looking ahead to next season and the women playing Division 1 football. But also, Tommy, for them to go and play in Croke Park, I know some of them would have played there last year in various finals, but for some maybe they weren't involved. And maybe sometimes here in Kildare we can take Croke Park for granted with the men. And I know, you know, during championship campaigns and league campaigns, some of those games were Mickey Mouse games played up in Croke Park, and people were saying they probably shouldn't have been played in Croke Park. This is a huge, momentous day for these women of Kildare to go up and play in, you know, our biggest national stadium.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I agree totally what you're saying there. And to get to Croke Park, I mean, there's counties, there's men and ladies, even Camogie people that have never set foot on Croke Park. And to get up to Croke Park into a national final, to get up there, first of all, is a great achievement. But to get up in there to a national final, and there'll be a hell of a crowd up there again on Sunday. Live television coverage, radio coverage. People now are starting to, they're really, ladies football has taken off over the last number of years. And it's teams like, counties like Kildare coming forward from Division 2 to Division 2, as you say, next year, into Division 1, mixing at the top table with the best footballers in the country. It's a marvellous achievement. That's something really that everybody possibly that can go to a match, get up there on Sunday and support the girls.
Absolutely. Full commentary, as we say, here on KFM on Sunday, 1 o'clock, with Seamus Dillon and Tara Byrne in association with Hanlon Concrete Products of Robertstown. Tommy, there's also a couple of hurling games being played tomorrow. The under 20 hurlers are out, as are the minor hurlers, both throwing in at 2 o'clock. They're playing Kerry and Carlow respectively.
Yeah, the under 20 hurlers, Owen Stapleton is the manager there. Great man, Owen. He's a great hurling man. And one thing, when you're talking to Owen, you're talking about under 20 hurling, he always refers to the fact that their number one job is developing hurlers. He keeps referring to Kildare as a developing county as regards hurling. And his job and the under 20 job, he looks upon as feeding players into the senior setup. And he's a great man to listen to. He loves the game of hurling and absolutely knows he's hurling. So they're playing Sunday. They're playing Saturday. First game, there's only three teams in this group, Carlow, Kildare and Kerry. And Kerry are the visitors to Hawkfield on Saturday at 2 o'clock. The one match that was played so far, Carlow beat Kerry 116-211. So we'll have to see what way the players or the team fares out tomorrow. The minors are in their second game. Adrian Kinsella, the manager here, and they had a very, very good game, a very good win over Leash in their opening game. Scored 4-11 against Leash, 4-11-15 points. That was a very, very impressive and very encouraging display. And hopefully now they can add to that one, and they need to get out of their group. That's the whole idea. And they're against Carlow in Fina. That game is at 2 o'clock as well. So two good games to look forward to tomorrow. Hopefully the weather and the wind or if the wind comes that it's died down by 2 o'clock, maybe not, so we'll have to wait and see. Nothing we can do about the weather anyway.
Indeed, and we'll have reports and updates of those games on More Music Sports Beat Saturday with Ross Lindsay tomorrow afternoon, and more build up to all the sporting action in our weekend sports preview show this evening at 6:30. There's a full round of local GAA fixtures as well, club fixtures, and the KDFL gets underway for its 30th season, and the best of luck to all 65 teams hoping to have a good season this year. Leinster Leader sports editor Tommy Callaghan, thanks for your time, Tommy, and good morning.